Welcome to the I Want More Comics podcast, recorded at I Want More Comics and Games, a local comic store in Thornton, Colorado. You can reach us by phone at 303-460-7226 or on all social media platforms. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the I Want More Comics and Games podcast. I almost screwed that up.
Where did you think you were?
Every time. It's been a bad week for that.
The stratosphere.
I said podcast on Facebook stream sale, and I almost said stream sale on the Facebook podcast. So let's just whatever.
We're moving forward. We do a
lot. Yeah.
You can't see us.
I'm Richie.
I'm Sean.
And I am still Keith.
That's correct. He hasn't changed yet. We are here. We are actually doing it a little early because we have plans this evening, which is fun. So let's jump right into the news.
What?
All right. News segment starts off with, I think we'll go the heavy one first and the light one next. So let's start with the heavy. This is from CBR.com. Also from the Twitter of the man himself, Al Ewing, is severing ties with his kind of partner with Immortal Hulk, Joe Bennett, over some illustrations drawn that are kind of circling the internet right now. The illustration was drawn back in 2017, but it still is very relevant today. It features an armored swordsman slaughtering tiny scurrying people with buck teeth, some of them cosplaying as Dracula. And it is in what Al says he believes is a depiction of the Brazil president Jair Bolsonaro. And he's basically slaughtering the insignificant leftist politician parties. It is a where one could argue a political statement. This one kind of leans more into extremist behavior. And this is a long history of Bennett kind of pushing the line of social commentary to straight up extremism, and this is it for Al. He's done, and he's incredibly apologetic. And I thought I'd bring that up to you guys. We could talk about it. We all know the history of Immortal Hulk number 43, and the problem with that had anti-Semitism.
Yeah, but what if our listeners don't know?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Bring
okay,
it up.
We'll get on it.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Sean, educate them.
Yeah, let us know. What about it?
There's things that happen in it. No, there's an image. They're in a jewelry store, and in the image that he drew, the panel that he drew, on the glass for the outside, he kind of spells jewelry.
Yeah, jewelry. Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. And
it's a bad look.
When the first time you brought it up, and you can look at it, and you may be like, well, was that bad? You know, like, it doesn't look good when somebody looks at it that way and all this, but here's the big deal, and that's what we've come to now, is that Al's seen enough.
Yes.
And it's tough when you see, you know, a good creative team break up.
Right.
Because we've seen it a lot, you know, like, you see some that go strong forever. You know, like, right. Snyder and Capullo, I think, are bros for forever, you know, this.
Logan Sale, same thing.
Yeah.
They're like, forever, yep.
They're going to, you know, and when they gel and when they work together, it's great. And I think that there's something to be said about the work that's done with Bennett and Al done, you know, together with what the Immortal Hulk run. It's going to be held up there.
It's a very solid run.
Yeah, it's going to be held up there. But when you turn around and see too far, you know, and that's what Al's bringing up now. I've seen too much. I can't turn a blind eye to this. This is not what I'm representative of. This is not what I'm willing to be part of. And I'm out. I'm tapping out.
Yeah. And that's fair. I will say that Bennett has, like we said, I think the biggest tell here is the history of Joe. And it seems like he has a very, very stern view at the idealisms of certain aspects, and he seems opinionated enough, not bold enough to just say it, and he kind of hides it in artwork, which is weird. But
artists have done that.
Right. They've hid for a long time.
All kinds of things in artworks forever and ever. Yes. So.
But I do appreciate Al being very vocal, trying to get ahead of it. And he says on his Twitter, you can find it all of this on his Twitter. It's not hidden anywhere. That's where CBR took it to. And it's he's very apologetic. He says he stands by all of those that refuse to buy his works based on his partnership with Joe Bennett. And he will no longer be working with him from here on out. And he says if he's lost your trust and you can't follow him to his other journeys, he says that's on him. And he'd love to, he's going to continue to try to usurp the tie-ins with his former partner. To include, he posted a link to the Rainbow Railroad, which is a donation program that will help a lot of the people that are currently being kind of taken advantage of, or all the way up to being abused in Brazil. So for all sorts of stuff, mental health. I'm not going to get into all the crazy things going on in Brazil, but you can look that up and see why this might be potentially a reason to get angry.
We live now in a world where we can't just shrug off, you know, grandpa's comments.
Right.
Is the basic way that it is. Is, you know, like we can no longer turn around and just go, oh, from a different era and things like this. Mm-hmm. I personally believe that there should be an opportunity for redemption for everyone.
Sure.
Because there's plenty of times I think somebody has said something or done something, especially if they chalk it up to humor rather than actually malicious intent. And if they can come forward and show, hey, I didn't understand that, you know, I made a mistake, I'm sorry for the ones I heard about this, I honestly and earnestly want to correct my behavior going forth, I believe everybody should be given the shot. Mm-hmm. And that's where it is right now. And that's why, you know, digging up old tweets and, you know, kind of pointing to, you know, the excuse of a different era is not just straight up an excuse, but if you're going to turn around and go down that road. Now, that's not what we're talking about not here really, with Joe Bennett. This is somebody who's very, very staunch in his views.
Yes.
It's evident through several pieces here. And there are going to be some people who don't care, you know, like, you know, I don't care. I'm just reading it for the art and all this.
Sure.
Fine.
That's totally fine.
You know, that's not the argument there, but I applaud Al for standing up and saying, hey, I'm not going to be a silent bystander to this. I'm not going to turn around to this. This is truly against what I believe in, and I'm going to make that vocal, and I'm going to take action.
I agree completely. And to your credit, like, we kind of did that with Joe already, because Joe kind of came out saying, like, oh, I didn't notice how that would be offensive. I can see it now, and blah, blah, blah. And then kind of like, we all went, oh, okay, so Joe said he didn't understand. And
some
now,
of his new things that everybody's used as point to here, mm-hmm. Get down to a political stance.
Yeah.
And that becomes then even more complicated, because if you backed somebody individually that you didn't, that they have bad values, you right. know, that's the type of thing and all this, but you, for whatever reason, wanted to back whatever idea was coming across and all this, it's a little bit different than just straight up, you know, being, you know, terrible yourself.
Right, right.
But you still have to, when you're making these stances, you kind of have to tread lightly now.
Right.
If you're ever going to be in a public forum and all this, you have to be, we honestly deal with it here. Like it's, you know, the store will take an active role in not trying to engage anything one direction or another. Through everything with the COVID situation, everything with the masks and all this, we follow mandates. We do that type of thing. We were not trying to make a political statement about a mask being required or not required or anything like this. And we were trying to encourage everyone to practice their own comfort level.
Right.
Well, that's different than if we, you know, turn around and come out and take one stance or the other.
That's correct.
And yeah, it means we play a little bit in the middle there with it. But I think that's an okay area as long as you're not taking bad action towards others.
Right. So. And in this case, I think that Al is doing almost exactly what Joe is on a more vocal platform, saying, like, if you believe that, that's fine, but we are not on the same team. Yeah. And that's what I take away from it. You take what you will. So we'll move on to a lighter note. And again, not a ton of info on this, but Scott Snyder did put out on his own tweet that Noctera is getting its TV deal. It's finalized. They signed all the paperwork. It's ready to go. Very early stages, obviously, we're on pen and paper here, so it's going to move into at least a year or so, I'm assuming, of casting and writing and then actually getting us the show for Nocterra, him and Tony S. Daniels' first creator-owned work together. What do you guys think of this?
Well, I think it's very cool that, you know, you get your TV deal, but as we've seen with coming out soon, Why the Last Man, it could be a lot of years before that comes to fruition, or it could be next year.
That is
you
correct.
You don't really know. So until the product actually comes out, you know, it's cool that they got the deal, but it could be something that maybe sits on a shelf for a while or could excite us all when it shows up in six months, nine months, you know.
And this isn't a call out, but like, have either of you been able to check out Nocterra outside of?
Yeah, I did get to read the first issue. I have not read past that, though.
I was going
to
ask if it excites you for the idea of a television
show.
Well,
and that's where I was. Almost everything I try to read the first, and I did on this one because we got it, and we had that image hosted at that
meeting.
I'm
super far ahead of you guys. I think I'm up to issue three. So,
But at the end of it, it's you know, I drifted away from it. It's, you know, the content's not my style.
Yeah,
you know?
And I could tell you that without even...
Yeah, it would have been easy to, you know, knowing what I like, yes. You know, you're like, oh, well, you know, it's not really your thing. That's fine. You know, like there's, you know, I like the creators. I think that they're very passionate about the project. I'm reminded here when we keep seeing these types of things go on about some of the, what I see as the evolution of Hollywood. There was a creator that was better friends with Sean through the old store, and then I got to know him in the early years of this store here, who would tell us some you know, like tidbit secrets of the industry. And one of the things that was going on in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, is that a lot of creators were jumping to Hollywood in the idea that it was easier to write a graphic novel than it was to storyboard and pitch your movie. And get Hollywood executives to kind of grab on. So producers and people who were trying to get an idea greenlit would basically get, you know, commission writer and artist to do the graphic novel. I believe, and this, I can't remember exactly where this was, but I thought that one of the early ones on this was Cowboys and Aliens. That was done like this style where you know, the graphic novel was ready at the same time. And it was part of the pitch, you know, it was early stages inside this that it made more sense to Hollywood execs to be able to read the whole story as a comic book, see it all and kind of green light from there. So now we just keep evolving how much deeper comics get into Hollywood. And what the big deal I see is today is that there's so much content being created that it's easy for Hollywood to greenlight a project like this. And I don't mean that it's never going to happen. I mean all the way till that it's going to get made because of the fact that you've already got the work, you know, work going ahead. You can always see so much of it, and you can jump without it feeling like it's such an unknown.
Right. And to that extent, we obviously have two incredible comic book creators here. So Tony S. Daniel and Scott Snyder have been in the comic biz for a while, and they obviously can create content. Were all three of us in the meeting for Nocterra? Or was it just you and I?
I think it was just you and I that were on the Zoom with Image.
I don't know if that's... I think we can still say that they kind of had the idea that they were going to do a TV show.
They knew the pitch was on.
Yeah, like they...
The beginning, absolutely.
Right, when they started Nocterra, they were already in deals with television. I think they used that as a pitch selling to us was like, oh, we're already in the works on that.
Conversations are ongoing. Yeah. Yep. You know, like, can't say anything details right now because, you know, it's early and that's where we see it leads to where we are now. But
exactly. Like this was written with the idea that it could be sitcom based. And I think if you read the comics, it lends itself to
episodic,
that as well.
I'd call it, not sitcom.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Episodic. Yeah.
Like, sitcom's if you find it funny killing all these people.
No, it's different. Actually very not funny.
Yeah.
Good point. It's not satirical at all.
Yeah. No. Let's everybody's like, wait, which book are you reading?
Great.
Yeah. When I heard
you guys
him
watch
say sitcom,
how
I was
talk.
Like,
no. You guys are in charge of watching how I say things right now.
Yeah.
We're not together. So
Richie's obviously been hitting the bottle. Enjoy the ride, guys.
But yeah. So, it's a very, very serious story of enveloping night.
And this is
so.
TV deal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They're looking at this as episodes and all this. And again, the premise seems exactly to fit that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just the same as like when we see, you mentioned Why the Last Man coming out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I would not have wanted to see that
as
just drilled down
movie,
to a movie.
It would have been
butchered. My God.
Oh, man.
It could not work.
As a TV show, yeah, I'm all in.
Let's
but
go.
But a movie, I would have been like, oh, my God, you're going to miss so much stuff.
There's so much good character development in all this.
Very excited. So congrats to everybody on the Noctera train. Congrats to Snyder and Tony S. Daniel. And let's hope this brings more people onto the issue. If you guys are looking for it, I think we still have number ones, I think. But trade should be available soon, too. So
yeah, we're coming right up on that.
Yeah,
on
he that. He also said in his tweet that volume two, the second arc, is going to be insane because Snyder does that. So let's move on to our reviews. That's it for the news.
Reviews. What done you did read?
Sean and I picked the same one, which I kind of knew was going to happen.
Boring.
But it happens, especially with Sean and I, when it comes to
you knew I was going to pick this.
Yeah, you could have laid off anyway. This is a fat fastball down the middle of the plate for Sean.
But let's shock everybody. And why don't you tell them, Sean, what you picked? And in essence, what I picked.
So yeah,
what'd you tag?
He jumped on my back like Yoda, and he's like, "Let's get through this training." I was like, "Oh God." Echolands.
Yes.
By J.H. Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see all the names
anymore. Hardman.
Yeah.
It's
Hayden Blackman, Stewart, and Todd Klein.
Yeah.
That's real small writing on that cover. Especially Stewart. When this thing is in my face. Yeah. I don't know. I like the fact that he decided to do something completely different with this book, but still make it J.H. Williams.
Right. So
I love that.
When we saw the first preview, obviously, we checked it out, and I didn't recognize that it was going to be in this kind of format. The comic itself is a journey. Yeah, it's a landscape version of a comic book. And
what did they call that back in the day with the DVDs? Letterboxing?
Yeah.
Letterboxed
or whatever? Go, careful, showing age.
It's my age is out there, whatever.
But so when it arrived, I was kind of shocked by it. I was like, oh, no, what happened to the book? And it ends up being perfect. J.H. Williams knows how to guide your eye through a story, and this is...
Yeah, as far as panelization goes, this guy is the king, man. He's so good.
Epic, fantasy-based, insanely well-illustrated. I just can't imagine anyone that purchased it regretted their choice. I ended up having to buy the variant as well because I'm a sucker. But I love this book. Echolands is definitely going to carry me into the next issue, and I don't see it slowing down.
Oh, no. This is, like Keith said, this is a big, giant, fast ball down the middle. But for I'm just like, this is tailor-made for me. I'm here.
They're like, Sean's going to like this.
They knew that
been somebody
so
reading
much
a book throughout the whole book. That, and I would have been like, yeah, I'm good.
That they're not only going to do that, but they're already, it already announced and already coming out with director's cuts and extra editions because they're like, oh, Sean's on. So, hey, we can sucker down some money here and all this.
Yeah, I need my DVD extras.
So this is your same creative team that did Batwoman in Detective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's...
If you liked that run, you should be fine on this one. God.
Yeah.
Yes. My favorite, so far my favorite review has been from an old ex-podcastee, Zach.
Oh, yeah. Zach came in to buy his stuff, and he looks at it, and he goes, should I buy this? I was like, did you just ask me that question? I said, you know it's J.H. Williams, right? And he's like, oh, okay, I'll buy it. And he's like, I thought it was going to be okay. And then, oh, my God, and he, like, freaked out on me.
Zach basically said, like, he's trying to cut down on his titles, and all of us try not to hear us roll our eyes at that. Mm-hmm. But he...
I just actively do it in front of him. It's fine.
But he was like, I'm not going to stay on this unless it's Promethea level good. And he was like, it is. It's Promethea level good. And I was like, it's J.H. Williams. What did you think he was going to bring?
What is wrong with you?
I just don't understand. So how many buns are you giving this?
Oh, five.
Five straight up. Without question, it's five buns.
He gave it five before he opened the cover.
He's not wrong.
I'm not, I mean, like.
I like to see you fanboy out.
I already know what I'm going to like, especially with something like this. When I see it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm there. I'm all there.
It's
this easy.
It's done.
We went to Morrison Con.
Yes.
There were 10 announced great creators there.
Yes.
And you had the opportunity to request your time with two of them. I think you got two. You could request two sessions.
Yeah, well, so you could do two, but you had to do a third and a fourth in case those sessions were filled up. So you had to have, like, just in cases.
Where did J.H. rank on your list?
I was number one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, this is again, Sean, who puts that over Jim Lee, who puts that over Quietly and Kirkman and Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. I have no knock about this, but we're talking about it again.
You know who I ended up with? Because I wanted Kirkman.
Yeah.
I ended up with Quietly and J.H. Williams.
And J.H. Williams.
Nice. And I was fine with that. I would have been fine with any of them, honestly.
Right.
But that wasn't even the better parts.
No.
The better part was sitting there talking with his wife. J.H. Williams' wife and all this is amazingly in depth to the comic world, too.
Oh, yeah. She is a script reader for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she highlights all the pertinent information on stuff like giant Alan Moore scripts.
Yes. We did. Yeah. We did. Discuss this on an older podcast.
Yeah,
we had.
Exactly.
Well, maybe they didn't hear that.
Yeah,
Richie.
I'm just saying.
Maybe people are just jumping on now.
Maybe.
They're
just
like,
trying to add some content today, Richie. So. Why are you so judgmental?
I'm not being. I'm just letting you know we talked about it.
Cool.
You know, J.H. Williams is disappointed in you.
Yeah. I as well give it 5 months. It wasn't a question either. But Keith, did you bring something different to the table?
Well, yeah, because you know I'm not going to be a follower like you. Like I have my own opinions.
Oh, okay.
You know, I look at this book and I'm like, oh yeah, that'll be good. I'll get to read it.
Yeah,
and
you
know, I have not read it yet, but I will because I do love the art. Yeah, you know that much, and what they put together and all this, and also like the quality of that story sounds. Yeah. You know, the plot sounds interesting. I was really really split. And I find it funny that between the one you guys grab and the two that I was split on for last week, we're all at Image.
Yeah.
Everything was at Image. And again, it wasn't a huge week. You know, it wasn't too crazy and all this. I was, you know, so my runner up and that I want to give a little nod to is Mom number 2.
Yes.
Because what is going on inside that book is just really fantastic.
And it's a saying because it's the penultimate book too, because you have 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, you know, it is a number 2 and all this, but the other one that gets to beat it out because it's falling under the same rule because I haven't brought it to the podcast yet because, you know, we were on hiatus.
Right.
Department of Truth. Number 12.
Yes, yes.
So Department of Truth has fired on all cylinders on every issue that's come out through this whole thing.
I feel bad that I'm like 4 issues behind on that book.
It's so good, though.
It's so amazing. It is so amazing that the art style is not my favorite, and I still am that deep into the book.
I agree 100%.
I think that's, and again, no knock on Martin Simmons. That he fantastic in what he does. It has a very obvious, you know, influences to Temple Smith, to Sienkiewicz, you know, like the art style has rooted history that you can tell that this is a crafter here. Like this is not just.
Oh, well, yeah. And I mean, he obviously, to me, he's doing a style that fits that story, too.
Exactly.
And, like you said, it's not my favorite style, but it makes sense.
But it also, you know, like I think that it was planned from get-go one because the content, that it was supposed to feel a little spooky. It was supposed to feel a little bit, you know, often disconnected from the real world.
The art brings me to Witches with Jock. Where it's super.
Jock's definitely in that world. Mm-hmm. I absolutely put all these people together.
Right.
And again, now there's a tremendous amount of talent that to take, you know, and not make it all the way formed, right?
Yes.
You know, to not have to try to live by the standards of, you know, muscle definition and body positioning and things like that, because that's not what drives the art inside this. Mm-hmm. So there's something to be said if you can tell a story without having to follow those types of world. But I'm super drawn in on just the content of the story and the ideas and the little twists, the little turns, the big twists, you know, the pieces like that, and the strength of familiarity. Mm-hmm. And complete abstract.
Right. And so the thing I want you to bring up, because there are potential people that have been on the fence for Department of Truth, or most likely like was like, oh, I've heard about that, but I didn't. They weren't available.
Maybe they just haven't picked it up yet.
So at this point in time, since it's yeah, so it's at issue 12, so I think it's just fine to spoil issue 1.
Yes.
I think that's what we're at in all this. You have a real X-Files Men in Black type startup.
Yep.
Into the story about an agent turning around and kind of getting dragged in and not knowing 100% what's going on.
Man in Black is exactly how I described it.
Yeah, yeah. And you're...
But not nearly as comedic.
No.
Again, no satire. No.
Yeah, no satire, Richie.
And literally being dragged into the idea that there is a group of high-paid individuals that have booked a chartered trip to see the edge of the world because they're flat earthers.
Yeah.
And that when they get there and they see something and there's this lady and this weirdness and it's all left cryptic in the very first issue, exactly like this, but that the group, the Men in Black group and all this, is designed to take care of the problem. Because here's the premise of the universe. If enough people believe, it becomes reality.
Right.
The whole idea, like we've been thinking about Loch Ness Monster or, or you know, like the Bigfoot or something like that. But if enough of us get together and believe, it actually can manifest.
That's what history is. Right. Yeah.
So it's if you want to go, you know, hardcore thinking about this, this is Tinian's way of saying, by the way, you know, history's written by the winners. You know, like this is part of the idea here. But he's just taking it in the supernatural idea here throughout this book. And to get the twist at the end of the first book that the head of the Department of Truth, the man behind setting all this up, the one guy who's going to train you and tell you what it is, who is it? It's Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, because why wouldn't it be?
Right.
I mean, the greatest conspiracy people wanted to ever have in their life or wanted to not be true in their life is the thing that started this whole, you know, this department.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's... They have to keep in check the conspiracy theorists because we have the power to manifest our own truth. And that is a great premise for Men in Black.
Living your own reality in your head and then make it real in your head and you get a group of like-minded people to group think it.
If that doesn't sell you to just buy the book and figure out where it goes, I mean, I can't help you because well, that is brilliant.
It does a really good job of telling episodes and having an underlying thread that's a totally different kind of plot line through the whole thing. Because the person who's being brought into the Department of Truth has an experience, has something of his own. Right. And it's what makes it really feel like X-Files to me, because, again, it's the idea that Mulder's sister was kidnapped this. But he has a personal connection to something that he feels was manifested. And to get to that little layer of truth as it's going on, as they're telling these other types of stories and all this, I think is just really engaging storytelling. And that's what's done well about this book.
It is brilliant, and it's a great pick.
It makes me want to wish I had another X-Files / Twin Peaks style TV show to watch again.
You know, it's been long enough.
It needs to happen.
You can watch the final season of Twin Peaks again.
I sure can't.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I've been catching it in pieces. It's amazing. Two.
It is amazing.
No, it is so good in pieces.
Yeah, in pieces.
What is
great.
It? Episode 8 with the atomic bomb? That was the awesomest thing on the planet. And then I don't know what happened with all
the
other
water.
Episodes.
This is the well.
Drink
got
deep.
A light. Got so, a light. Yeah, it's amazing. We should try it again. We should do it as a group.
I don't think I can.
It'll be fine. You'll love
podcast.
It.
Just do Twin Peaks and do reactions.
There's actually a group of people that did that already.
I'm sure they have.
Two veterans took their
two
friends,
new people all the way through.
Never went and never watched it.
All the way from the beginning.
Yeah.
We could do it. Could have done that with Megan, but she started watching on her own. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keith, what was your grade on it?
I am a little bit influenced by the total,
the entire story.
The entire
just
so
the issue.
So
yeah.
I'm 4.75.
Perfect. Yeah.
4.75.
That's fine.
On the buns.
Well, that would lead us into spinning the racks.
Spinning the racks.
I don't like when.
Spinning the racks.
We need a lot more room back here to dab.
Keith was dancing.
That was
there
was
ended
dabbing.
In a dab.
It was awesome.
I'm being punished for something. I don't know what.
Da-na-na is probably one of my favorite things.
I don't
this
like
planet.
This is becoming a thing.
Next week, me and Sean on the podcast, will kid and play to that.
Oh, shit. Well, no, I don't know.
My foot might be destroyed.
You gotta get better first.
Well, it's worth the sacrifice.
Yeah. Right now
he gets two hops in. Oh my god!
If I'm down for the rest of the podcast, you guys gotta keep going.
We gotta move in. So spinning the racks today is going to.
Did you
be,
say spinning the racks?
I did. I just said it. Yeah.
Did I have to hit the button?
No,
again?
You're fine.
All right.
When I say it, it's the same as the stinger saying it. Same guy.
You're not.
I would like one stinger, please.
What?
Spinning the racks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so let's try to get on the topic, and our topic of discussion today is actually a focus on a content creator that kind of exploded on the scene. It's been around for a while, and people...
Is it Stan Lee?
It's not Stanley. No. It is.
Stanley's been around for a while. Yeah. I was going with your clue.
Yes. That's good. His name is Tom.
Tom?
Tom Taylor is who we're going to be talking about and kind of discussing his works and pieces, things that we suggest other people read.
Are we allowed to confuse Tom Taylor with any other Tom that we can think of?
I'm trying to think.
Because that's what the internet does.
Didn't he write Batman?
No, he did not write Batman.
Mr. Miracle.
He didn't write Mr. Miracle either.
Yeah.
and he isn't on Strange Adventures or Rorschach.
I don't think. Who are we talking about?
I know, this is very weird. Tom Taylor is the creator of one big giant store hit that we call Deceased.
The funny thing is, if you follow him and Tom King on Twitter,
they
play up on this so hard.
Which is
so
what I love funny. About it. Yeah.
For like a year, they switched their profile pictures.
Oh, yeah.
and Tom wears usually like a little Newsies hat, and Tom King wears a DC hat, and they both switched their hats one time too, just to really mess with people. So this is, but we are talking about Tom Taylor today. So, what can we say about this writer that isn't going to blow him out of the water? Like, no hyperbole. I don't think I've read something that I didn't like from him.
That stuff's all been. Like, for what I've read, I've actually enjoyed quite a lot.
I haven't read his whole thing. No. But
one of my first things that I can think of that really, to me, is surprising, and I don't mean that in a bad way, like, oh, I can't believe this guy can write. I mean that the fandom that it brought, that I just did not think that this this comic line would, was Injustice.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you think, oh, they're going to put out a Injustice book.
Video game,
the video game. It's just gonna be a comic book, just telling the book story. Right. What people aren't really gonna care about that, you know? Right. They want to play the video game. You know, that's not what it means and all this. But this amped the fandom. This went way further than the video game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
oh yeah,
year five.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
it's on year five. Yes.
Yeah, it kept rolling and kept going and all this, and it had tremendously good fan base to it. Because it was quality work.
It did. And Injustice is really where the beginnings of Tom Taylor's creative style kind of emerges. And that style to me is taking everything that you believe cannot be changed and has to work in a certain way based on your idea of how comics have been written for a while, and then flipping it completely on its side and changing the entire format and doing it so well that you accept every change. And usually he does that by finding the character's voice and really locking in on that voice. So regardless of how vastly different the story is, the character that's going through that is still that character that you know and love for a long time.
See, and I would have just said all that very simply as saying twisted reality.
Sure, twisted
reality. He takes what what's going on right now, gives it a twist, gives it an angle, and it becomes so engrossing and engaging.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to get too far ahead in our conversation here and all this, but if I was going to be in charge of putting him on a project, I would chain him to a desk and make him turn out Elseworlds and What Ifs.
That's all Keith.
I would want.
Yes.
just keep going. It's like, because you can tell with what he's done inside this, with all the different things that he's picked at and he's worked on, there's a fandom to him, you know? And I think it's actually a real common thread with some of the better and more popular writers.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell Donnie Cates has a fandom about things that he's read, and he comes and he brings that to what he creates.
Yes.
And Tom Taylor, it's very obvious about that, because he may twist some things and give you something different than what you were expecting, but it's all done in the true voice.
Yeah. And I agree completely. So what I wanted to get from your guys' perspective, being in the comic shop, did you guys see an explosion, or was it kind of like a growth in the Injustice series when it did drop? Was it like, wow, that's selling better than we thought it was? Or was it like just getting snapped off the shelves?
Well, the first one hit obviously because it had ties to the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't know that it ever like dropped off or fell off, but I, like with any comic book, you know, orders recede a little bit because it's not number ones, and then they regain focus. And I felt like this was one that actually gained readers
it
over
did.
Time.
We had a tough time keeping it in stock.
On the trades, I think, even though than the issues, because I've reordered the trades for that forever. And I actually am having a hard time getting them now because I don't think they're in print currently.
No, you keep reforming.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, originally came out as like two different trades per year, and then they came out with one collection.
The compendium for volume one, compendium for volume two, or year two, whatever, complete. Yeah. That's what it was, year two, year one, complete, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And with Injustice, he basically has to take a story that was created from a video game.
Well, here's something funny, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was reordering these so often, initially, and this is when Zach was still here.
Yeah.
Zach was like, why do you keep ordering these? Why do you keep getting these in? I'm like, because we keep selling them out. He was like, what? Yeah. I was like, no, dude, I have to order this like every week. You don't understand.
Right. And that's one of the things I wanted to bring up is the perspective of a comic shop and the idea of Elseworlds. Elseworlds are always, they always have like a glimmer of hope to be good sellers. But for the, I would say for the most part, especially in the that last decade or so, Elseworlds weren't like the must buy, you know, especially if it's linked to a video game, you know, Mortal Kombat sales. There's always going to be the niche and cult following that wants them, of course. And there's always number one spec buyers and things. But as a comic book that's going to go ongoing, it usually dies off. And Injustice, to me, was one of those first ones where you're like, why is that still around? What's going on? Are we really in the fifth season of that? That's crazy. So it definitely highlights the creator behind that. Then I move into X-Men Red. How did either of you check out X-Men Red? This was during the time we had X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue.
No, this was my break from X-Men. This was the era that I was out on it.
It was a lot of people's breaks from X-Men.
Yeah, it was. Because and I think that it very much that era leads to why they did what they did with Hickman, was to give it a flat out defibrillator on the table kind of idea, because X-Men was still selling okay enough.
Right.
They were selling, you know, it was fine.
Yes.
But I do know this, no matter what it was, even if I wasn't reading it, I was ordering it.
Yes.
And I had to follow that. And Red followed the same trend. Yep. Red did the same type of thing where Red was one of the strongest sellers. Mm-hmm. You always sell Uncanny better than any other X-Men because it's just the game. But Red was 15 copies.
Yeah.
You know, and at that time, 15 copies was probably 20-25% more than any other of the titles going on at the time. And I do absolutely remember it was a gainer. It was something that by issue four, it gains.
For most comics, that's kind of rare.
it's not.
It doesn't happen very often.
I feel like we're setting up a trend here in this,
that
in
is
this
correct.
Conversation.
Because once I get through X-Men, he did a run, which I'm really low on, but Superior Iron Man, he did that as well. And but then he moves into the one that I know we all are ready to talk about, which is Deceased.
But see, that's Deceased is the great one to make an example back to Injustice when you wanted to ask how did Injustice sell.
Yeah.
I think if any of us had read it and been into it and started hyping it, we would have watched it explode.
I agree.
But when DC gave us the early copies of Deceased.
Yes.
And I read one, and I'm like, I'm kind of curious about this because I remember Marvel Zombies.
I'm totally giving this to Keith because I promise you I wasn't going to read this comic.
And I sat there, and I read the first issue, and I go, what? I'm like, there's the one point, the one thing that just snapped me into everything about that is that the zombie virus of the DC universe is the anti-life equation mutated by technology.
Yeah.
You're sitting there and you're like, that's completely real. Like, that's that's legitimately lore-filled.
In my fantasy world, that is fact.
That is Darkseid, what were you doing?
And the fact that it got transmitted by Cyborg's brain was awesome.
And, like, in the middle of the whole thing, you had the what was the writer that shows up there? Who am I thinking of? That's the... God, it was like, see, this is where I'm just not so good on the DC lore, but the Phantom Rider, the Death Rider, I don't know. It's a cosmic character in DC. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, Black Rider.
Black Rider, there it is. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. So Black Rider shows up. You're just like, this is all, and then like, boom, tube, travel, send it back. You know?
Oh, yeah. He definitely said, hey, I'm going to pull some Kirby stuff from here, and I'm going to take some of this. And
I will say that when I saw it, basically it looked like DC Zombies. And I went,
I loved your skepticism when I'm like, you need to read this. And you're like, all right, kid. You know, I'm not falling for it again.
I have been through zombie. Marvel had a very infamous zombie era, and it took over. And then zombies themselves started.
See, the beginning of it, it was fantastic, and that's why I wanted to try this.
Volume 1 and Volume 2, which were fantastic because they were written by Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, correct.
The zombie master.
Yeah, and he goes and takes it and makes basically pop culture zombies almost a full-blown trope that you have to really bring your A-game to touch.
Uh-huh.
And so when you see, like, okay, DC's doing their zombies now, you as a person that's been through it a while, I was like, I'm not going to add that to my poll because I don't need a story about DC zombies.
I have to ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you get all the variants, the movie tie-in variants, too?
I did not get the movie tie-in variants. I got the Matina variants. Yeah, I had
that was a real hard choice there when you had three covers before you got into any kind of extra one.
They were like Pokemon for me. I took them all.
I was so wrong. So wrong. Keith made me... What ended up happening is DC would release it, I think, I want to say 2 to 3 weeks out or something.
Four, because we got it before we had to make the next order.
And
DC was trying to pump up our orders by giving it to us early and saying, hey, believe in it, read it, you'll know who to sell it to, pump up your orders, don't be stupid.
Guess who we sold it to?
Everyone.
Everybody. It wasn't anyone we did.
Because of the three variants.
The best part is we can still sell sets of it all the time.
All the time.
Because of the three variants and certain and several people that had to have all three.
But
some people chose and some people bounced around. This book sold more copies every time it came out than any other book in that month for us.
Yes. And it was worth it. This isn't a bump numbers because, it had a cool gimmicky thing. This was well written and passionate about change and character development up the wazoo in a medium that doesn't have a ton of character development, because if you change too much,
people get weird.
People get real angry. And in this case, it wasn't, that did not happen. It was so well done. I remember.
But it also kept the heart
every
of a
time,
lot of the characters.
Every time.
You know what another trick is in our industry?
Go for it.
If the gimmick was bad, we start getting it offered back to us. So if all these gimmick covers were a bad idea and people have regret after they've bought the whole thing and all this, people start trading it back in.
All of a sudden we start seeing them for trade.
Yeah. You know how few times we've ever taken this book back in trade?
I have one set I'm trying to complete to bring to the stream,
and
I can't complete.
It's so hard.
I'm missing like 2 issues. I'm like, what?
No, people chased this down. People grabbed, people were making sure that they got everything about it and all this. And again, at the time, it's been pretty solid throughout most of our years here that the gold standard in sales is Batman. That's the Batman main book is the gold standard. That's what you sell.
Right.
And you'll every so often get something that sells a little bit better. House of X, Powers of 10 was selling a little bit better at the time that was coming out. Mm-hmm. A lot of hype to that. Batman Damned sold better. This sold better than all of them. We were at the time doing Batman numbers of about 115 to 125, and this was 220. It was pure fire.
Yeah.
And here's back to the point. A lot of people played the same as everybody else here and says, I don't know. And we just pushed
it. Yeah.
We just dared people and just told them, you got to try this thing.
Right.
And again, it was try one, and then if anybody had tried one and got...
It was over. Yeah. We didn't try to sell
I need
the
all
rest.
The covers. I'm out of cover. I'm out of the horror variant on number one. That's over.
But it was... And to its credit, when we started, we had to push it. The thing I wanted to get at real quick is that we're constantly busy. Part of the reason this podcast is really tough to do is because we're so busy and trying to get things done. No matter how busy we were, when that PDF dropped for the release, we each took turns. all right, you're 10 minutes.
Now,
go check
let's,
it out.
Let's be fair about that.
Sure.
Okay. I would always see it because it was in my email that DC had sent it.
Mm-hmm.
I would then read it, and then I would come and taunt you that I have read it.
Yes.
Yes, that I read.
Yes.
Is it DC's? is that available?
And I think I was the only one that was patient enough to wait for the actual book.
Did you actually wait for the book?
No, most I read the first one to read it, obviously. And then I didn't read a lot of them. I read the
occasional I made you read two and three.
I read the occasional one, yes.
Because two and three had such big monumental moments in it that I was like, you have to see what
Alfred
he just
and Batman? Did. Yeah, that was two. Or I think that was two.
Yeah, and then,
three Superman? Was Superman. Yeah.
Yeah, or was it four that I'm thinking of? That's got
four was
the little Captain Atom, right?
Yes, correct. The bubble, yes.
Yeah.
Well, because I know I read the first one, then I know I skipped one or two there, and then read one other one, and then I read most of them actually when the book was out.
Right, and so this also leads in deceased sales lead into the concept of a digital only or digital first. You know,
well, and again, Injustice was digital first.
Yes. Yes.
All of Injustice came out
digital
first.
In fact, it won
first.
Two awards being digital release.
Mm-hmm.
IGN's digital release 2014 and 17.
So maybe you potentially also say that we had a little bit less sales because of that. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's very true because I think if you're a digital reader, you're not hitting up the store as often. Like I know some digital readers that come in here and grab some trades and do some stuff. You know, it's fine. It works just fine for the mechanics of the business. But I think that if you're trained to read, you know, like if you're a weekly Wednesday Warrior, you're not doing a lot of digital first stuff.
Correct. And to the point, what I was going to say is that a lot of those digital readers came in looking for physical copies. They wanted to hold that. They wanted to have it. It was that good that they came here. And it's just, it was so, so incredible watching that. And again, we pushed the first issue, but there have been four arcs since then. And the push was, it's deceased. It's still Tom Taylor. And that was it. That's all we said. And it just took off like crazy.
By the time you saw the quality that was here, we now started pushing it as Tom Taylor.
Right.
The concept and the plot is great. The covers are fun.
Yeah.
But we started actually promoting the creator on it because it was Tom Taylor has earned his trust in him. You know, he writes something good. It's the same thing as somebody's going to buy a new Donnie Cates book because they're a Donnie Cates fan. Or Tom King. All of this type of stuff.
I don't know. I know he's got a blood feud with somebody. You know who King. That is? No, Tom Taylor does.
Who's that?
Gail Simone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On Twitter.
That's great.
Feud.
Yeah, of course.
Air parentheses. Uh-huh. All the time. Yes. It's hilarious.
Well, and I was going to say that Tom is that type of creator where if he sees you on... mentioning anything on Facebook or something, he'll just randomly pop up and be like, hey, what's up? I created that.
He's engaged.
Yeah, he's super engaged. And like one of my favorite ones was somebody put up a review for one of the Suicide Squad issues, and he goes, some other commenter said, T-minus 5 minutes before Tom Taylor shows up, and then Tom Taylor goes, I'm here. And everyone loses their mind.
That's hilarious.
He wasn't tagged. He just was there somehow. So he's that type of engaging creator. So we go from the success of Deceased into Suicide Squad and then his black label Hellblazer. Did anybody read that?
Sean probably skipped it, right?
Yeah, I totally skipped it.
Oh, yeah?
Rise and Fall?
I did read it.
Right?
No, I read it.
Yeah. What'd you think Hellblazer. About it? It was a 3-issue... prestige format.
I actually think he should do more Hellblazer. So that's what I think about it.
Yeah, it's another Elseworld, but with, again, if you read, I'm going to blank on the names, but there's an arc for Constantine and Deceased as well. And the way he writes Constantine is almost pitch perfect.
It's very, I really like the way he writes Constantine. But he definitely blends old style Constantine with a little bit of a heart Constantine.
Yes, a little bit. He's got a teensy heart.
It's not a ton. Not like the because they tried to like PG Constantine for a while there. And it was not very good. Because he is definitely the anti-hero. That's where he plays best.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it pretty well when he decided to go, okay, I'm going to use old style, but I'm going to give him just that little bit of heart.
Right,
just that little bit, that little bit of flavor. Yes.
It was another pairing of creators that really made that book click because that was Derek Robertson.
Yes,
oh yeah,
yes so it was.
That really, that really is the kind of the flavor that you want for that. Mm-hmm. And after his time on, you know, Transmit and all the other boys and all that stuff. I mean, like
when he's not busy, like playing guitar and singing Beatles tunes in the middle of the
hotel. Just keep telling everybody we went to Morrison Con.
Do you guys remember we went to Morrison Con?
We were really cool.
Y'all missed out. It was awesome.
We are really cool.
Me mad, just so you guys know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't imagine either of you jumped in on Suicide Squad. Did you?
I did not, no.
I didn't think so. That's not your flavor, but I did join it, and Tom Taylor, again, this one being interesting enough that it's in continuity, he finds the voice, finds what the content's supposed to be, and then works with that to make an excellent story. He brings in a whole bunch of new characters, and kind of like James Gunn does with the film, he brings in the idea of, like, no one's safe. Even if you want them to be, they're not going to be. So it's, yeah, he actually, I'll get to that. But he did an excellent job. I know so many people that were buying it simply because it was Tom Taylor and actually dropped the new Suicide Squad because it wasn't.
Because not.
And I was like,
well,
you guys
I know a
can
bunch of people
on it,
jumped
but
onto Nightwing because of him.
We were about to get to current.
Nightwing's, so. Nightwing's more current. It's actually right after Star Wars. Age of Republic. He did a ton of the Age of Republic ones, the one shots that came out. There was a whole list of them, but he did like 8 of them. And so, again,
he did. I'm looking at notes as we do this. Yeah, cool. He did the Resistance era.
Yes.
So
Age
it
of
was,
Resistance. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So there was with the Star Wars. There was 3 different eras.
Right.
Age of Republic. Public. Age of. Resistance is the newest era.
Yes.
Republic was the original.
And Rebellion.
And Rebellion is the middle
there
era.
There you go.
Is the Luke, you know, the...
That's your your typical one. Yeah. And so he did the Resistance era.
Yeah, he did Resistance era.
Thank you. Because, I saw Snoke on there and things like that. So he did all that. And then he comes back to redeem Nightwing. And this is personal to my heart.
The number of people on my Facebook timeline that were comic shop owners and were just supremely impressed that Nightwing was back.
Yeah.
Now again, Nightwing went through we can call it what it is.
I think we need to have a moment of silence for Rick.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it, both of you.
I think we need a moment of
silence. I don't know
why.
I
was going to refer to it as a less popular era of Nightwing.
I mean, I'm sad he's gone.
Sean loved that era.
Oh, it was great.
But for reasons that are evil.
All of the poking I got to do on Richie was, it's just.
Yeah. I want to say it got down to.
So you're
like,
saying Tom Taylor did not write Rick Grayson?
He did not. He did not at all. There's no Rick Grayson and Tom Taylor.
Then he's a failure in my
eyes.
He's
not.
I think I'm worried that his most recent run is pandering. Because it centers around a three-legged dog. And I think he just went for the easy.
I think he needed to because Nightwing was almost canceled.
You guys are into it for the dog.
That is not true.
You hate the dog?
I love the dog.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you hate dogs.
Wow. I hope you have some. Have any of you actually checked out Nightwing?
No.
It's not my character. Sorry, buddy.
No, dude.
I just thought you would check out the first one.
And it was gone.
No. It was gone
and
quick,
I couldn't read it. And then I was like,
gone real
well,
quick.
One of these days I'll read it as a trade, I guess, because that's over.
So Nightwing ends up.
I've literally given up on the idea that I'm going to get to everything. It just
cannot happen. It just can't happen.
So, my life does not lend me to do that like it did 20 years ago when I was reading everything.
Yeah.
I don't get to read everything anymore.
But Tom King had taken Nightwing into kind of an era where it was really tough to read. It changed the character's fundamentals, if you will. And a lot of people kind of fell off in that aspect. And I was one of them. I was still reading it because I got a problem. But
did you get an eye twitch every time you
saw
Rick?
Every single time. There were a lot of I don't like bashing things, but this was not a great run of Nightwing in my eyes. Wasn't for me. And when I heard Tom taking over, and this was after I saw Deceased, I had figured out that he had written X-Men Red, which is something I really enjoyed. I was just like, finally, I know he's going to bring it back. And he did. He immediately changed the entire flavor of Nightwing back to, and it, by change, I mean he really kind of just rectified what was incorrect. And in that aspect is taking him to new heights too. With sales on Nightwing and things like that, I'm assuming you saw growth again, and it was just...
No, I mean, Nightwing's been the most explosive
right.
upward trend book out there.
From where it was, for sure. It's got to be night and day.
Yeah.
But again, a story that I'm reading consistently, the second it comes out, I want to pick it up and check it out. So
Can you name right now, without cheating, his current right now, what he's on?
Like what?
What books is... Is Tom Taylor currently writing right now? Because here's another deal that we're kind of seeing in this, is that when a writer is good, a writer can turn around and do a lot. Mm-hmm. And this guy is one step below Colin Bunn.
Yeah, I know he has a ton. And most of them are like side stories. So is he part of, he's not part of Vampires, is he?
No, the other one.
He's not
Dark Ages this dark, week.
Yeah, Dark mm-hmm. Ages and this week, which this I week wanted is, to bring
which is gone.
At the end. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that at the end.
There's dark a Batman Knights. Book.
Is that Knights?
The Detective.
The Detective.
He's with Kubert on the detective.
Yep.
Superman, Son of Kal-El.
Son of Kal-El. Yep.
Another one that's lighting it up
mm-hmm,
right now,
mm-hmm.
and with growth. And I mean, and recently he just wrapped up stuff like Miles Morales.
Yep.
I was trying to remember what other ones we're going right now and all this.
In the future one, there is a Game of Thrones style dark armored Justice League kind of thing is what he's doing next.
Some other like surprise one. This one I think Sean wouldn't recognize as his work, but I think Sean read it back in, I believe it was right around New 52 time. They did the National Comics one shots and he did Rose and Thorn. And I would imagine that was one that you would have read because those are characters you kind of...
I definitely would have read it. I definitely did read it, actually, but I didn't. So back
you
then,
you wouldn't
I would
trigger it as him when it's a one-shot kind yeah. of thing.
Yeah. Well, and then unknown to me, I just showed him he was writing some Star Wars stuff in 2011.
Correct. Bloodlines like, or something
yeah,
like that.
The Boba Fett stuff. I was all, oh.
Oh, yeah.
I just found out he had written... This is really off the beaten path, but he wrote the story for the video game of DCU Online for the Green Lantern War.
Didn't know that until he just said that.
Yeah.
Well, and another big one that I remember because Cover Alpha did a cover for it was Seven Secrets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Seven Secrets is his own creation, and mm-hmm. again, incredibly well.
So back in 2010, he was doing Star Wars Adventures.
Yeah.
So.
So
he's been around for a minute.
He's been around for a minute, but I love that he's finally getting the recognition he deserves.
To me, it's likely you've read something and you didn't even realize it was him.
You were like, man, I really like that. And you just kind of went away from it. And it's just Tom doing what he does best.
Yeah, he wrote Darth Maul Death Sentence.
Yep.
So all this Dark Horse stuff that back in the day before, you know.
So now we get to one that released... as of this podcast yesterday, and it's already gone. Let me tell you that Keith did not skimp on the ordering.
Yeah, I walked in today. Somebody asked me for it. I was like, oh, yeah, it's right over. Oh, it's not over there. Blood. It's gone. We had a ton of that stuff. What the hell?
The current game that's becoming real challenging for ordering is that there are very few. It is a very low percentage of people pre-ordering.
Yeah.
So for me to, you know, like kind of pay attention to something, I take a look when we put an order in.
Of course
in,
you do.
And I look at three factors. And number one is who's pre-ordered it, mm-hmm. which partially is a number and partially is also who. Because if I see certain names on there that don't pre-order a lot of things, well, then actually I think that this book's already hit a little bit of buzz and I'm going to pay a little bit more attention.
Right.
Because there's some people who just pre-order only a couple things.
Right, right.
And if they've heard about this, then to me already, spike it up a little bit.
That means add a few numbers.
Yeah. Number two is, where are we going to copy a list from?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Superman, Son of Kal-El comes out. Well, we're probably copying over from Superman.
Right.
You know,
right.
like that's there. And maybe not everybody sticks because maybe they just don't care about, you know, the kid or whatever.
Right.
That's fine. Whatever. No problem there. And then number three is, have I heard anywhere else on the internet about people talking about it? I try to keep an ear out for all that different type of stuff just so I can see where the hype is. So,
sure.
you know, my example here won't be a Tom Taylor, but like House of Slaughter comes from, Something is Killing the Children. And I expect another upscale growth into it because of the fact that it's a number one and how big number one was for Something is Killing the Children, how many people are talking about it on the internet,
right.
you know, like, so. That book's going to be big, mm-hmm. individually there, and you kind of like pay attention to things like this. Absolutely. But sometimes, you know, like again, Dark Ages is hitting, and I feel that Marvel has not done a good job of explaining what the story
they did not. They did not.
And so you're, you know, like that, if they're not conveying that out there to the populace and getting them into it, then I don't know where that's, you know, I don't know where to judge it off of that. I also feel like we're seeing DC versus vampires coming up real quick.
Yes, we
and are. Again, another one I'm not seeing the buzz on. I'm not seeing anything there. Mm-hmm. Could have people carry over.
Yeah.
But you know, like I just don't know how to gauge it. And so, yeah, dark ages.
But again, I want to explain that. It's not like we brought in like 15 copies and put it on the rack and saw how it did. It was
just for the A cover. It was like 75 copies. Yeah,
correct. It was.
And then there was variants.
Yeah. Then there were variants. Five, and it went all gone. And I know that I don't know if you guys got a chance to check it out or not.
No. Not at all.
Nope.
I didn't think so.
I did not think that I had to rush out and make sure I read this thing in the first 24 hours. Yes. At 75 copies. Or I'm telling you, straight up, by the way.
The pull for was like 20?
Yeah, it wasn't that much.
Or something like that?
No. When I put the order in, the pull was 3.
Yes. So there you go.
Yes. It was
so
three. And I'm sitting there like 3, and I'm like, well, it's Tom Taylor. I got some faith that we can push it a little bit. Yeah. We could do this. Oh, man, that's a whole bunch of variants. Oh, God, we'll do this. 75.
So I read it thinking like, okay, I'm going to try to push this and see what it's about. And I read it and I went, oh, I got to be quiet because it's going to sell quick. And it is. It's exactly the thing about Tom that I don't want to do is say that it's just like this story, you know, but every time he writes a tale, you kind of go like with Deceased, it was like, this is DC Zombies. And you're like, yeah, but that's not fair to say.
No,
it does get there. And that there's a part of that in there, but that's not true. And it's the same way here where Dark Ages can be described as Marvel's Deceased, but that's not fair at all to say. It's there. It's got a tiny bit of it in there.
Again, I didn't even have to read. It's not zombies, is it?
It's not.
It's not. Marvel has zombies. Yeah. They're not repeating it, rinsing and repeating here.
Yeah.
But
the thing I'll say is that he seems to have a problem with electronics. And they do things. And again, it's another situation where he's taking your Marvel universe now, and everything that you think is safe and sacred, he's going to twist the story. And it's a twisted tale with all the characters, and it feels like it's going to do the same thing with massive character development, change everything you think you know about the Marvel universe, and then spin it to where you actually care about this whole brand new version of what you loved before. And that is just what Tom Taylor is. He is giving you everything you want and then expanding on it in the correct way that doesn't feel like he's attacking your, I'm putting these in air quotes that you can't see, attacking your childhood or changing your character so far beyond the point of recognition that you don't know who he is, a la Nightwing.
Yes. Hey, man, Rick was the man.
My point being is that
maybe you just didn't give Rick enough chance.
I gave Rick many chances.
You should probably go back and reread.
Possibly gave Rick more money Rick's than heart. Anyone in this building.
That's not true. We ordered.
No,
the
you
comics.
Ordered them. I paid you to.
Do you want to go down to the
Rick.
Other end and see how many didn't get bought when they became Rick?
No, I know.
Yeah.
Either way,
I own all of.
You just wait. You just wait till Rick. Is in a movie.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, man.
It will
I hope. Oh,
I mean,
man.
We are here where One More Day is selling again, so I don't
even understand
so
that.
So potentially one day Rick Grayson will be worth millions. I can't wait.
I heard the rumor that Rick Grayson was going to be in the new Batman movie and that everybody should buy those comics now.
That is correct.
In and at least 30 copies
you
of each.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. We're,
falsely.
Yeah.
That potentially.
You cannot prove I'm lying.
No, and we can't tell you where we heard
and
this.
Maybe I just heard it in my own head.
Right.
And that would still make me true.
I mean, if I say it over here on mic.
Yeah, you know, like just a little.
Fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine. Hey.
Rick, who?
Yeah.
I heard Rick Grayson's going to be in the new Batman
Look
movie.
At that. There it is. Either way, that's up for you to decide if you want to join on that. The safest bet, though, is to keep with Tom Taylor. That's where I'm going to say you want to keep going.
Tom has earned respect and a place at the table, and that everything that he does should get an evaluation.
Absolutely. It,
like all creators, you may find a project that's not in your fit.
It's going to happen.
You know, not your style and all this. I can think of some creators out there that did a lot of wide variety, and I really like how they write, as an example. But this book that they did dealt with a story that I just couldn't care about, and this book was deeply into something that I find cool, and of course, I'm going to love one of those, and the other one I may pass on.
Arguably, I think that that is what a good writer is that they beat Tynan does that perfectly, where I love the way Tynan writes, but he writes certain genres that I'm not a fan of. Mm-hmm. And because he does that genre so well, the people that are fan of that genre mm-hmm. love him so much that they buy up everything. And I'm like, yeah, that, I know that that's a good story. I don't need to read it to know. I know Tynan's writing.
No one's going to be able to read everything.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with Tom, is that whatever he does go and do, I'm pretty sure it's going to be excellent, even without even opening the page.
Yeah.
That's where he's gotten to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I think he's there. I think everybody, if you haven't paid attention, you should reevaluate, you know, like the list that we kind of gave here. Absolutely. Take a look at it and all this and see what it's at. See something if you know, and I'll bet, like I said, most people have read something by him already.
Exactly. And if you haven't, come to us. We will help you out regardless. That is everything for this podcast. We got to go check out a movie, guys. Let's go enjoy that. And until then, I'm Richie.
I are Sean.
I still Keith?
Yeah, you're still Keith. That's right. Just saying, I'm Keith.
Just checking. Yeah. I didn't know.
All right, we'll catch you next issue.